The question of the bourgeois involves a real issue with Christians, which Christians cannot afford to shirk. For it is difficult to deny that there is a fundamental disharmony between bourgeois and Christian civilization, and between the mind of the bourgeois and the mind of Christ. But first, let us admit that there is no use hunting for the bourgeois, for we are all more or less bourgeois, and our civilization is bourgeois from top to bottom. Hence, there can be no question of treating the bourgeois in the orthodox communist fashion as a gang of antisocial reptiles who can be exterminated summarily by the revolutionary proletariat. For in order to liquidate the bourgeoisie, modern society would have to liquidate itself. Maybe that's what the government's up to. Anyway, this is where Marx went wrong. His theory of increasing misery led him to suppose that the line of class division would become sharper and more strongly defined until the rising tide of popular misery broke the dikes and swept away the closed world of privileged bourgeois society. Instead of this, we have seen the bourgeois culture, the bourgeois mind, even the bourgeois standards of life, advancing and expanding until they became diffused throughout the whole social organism and dominated the whole spirit of modern civilization. I think I've mentioned this on the show before, but there I've heard a story, and listen, I cannot tell you who I heard it from. I can't tell you the details of the story. I cannot even tell you the two people that were allegedly debating. But I've heard this implied at one point in time that there were two men who wanted to basically revolutionize and enslave the world, and they presented two alternative positions. One, which nobody believes, was the capitalist position, or you might say pseudo-capitalist position, and the other was the communist socialist position. And they said, and as they debated, they knew they were two sides of the same coin, meaning if we can get society, the members of society, to conceive of everything in their universe from a purely materialistic perspective, then we can revolutionize completely the world. Do you see why? See, the Christian culture would tell you that man is a creature composed of spirit and matter. So there is a material component to us, but not the complete component. And so the Christian world always maintained the spirituality that led us to higher things. But the capitalist or pseudo-capitalist and the communist slash socialist said all we need to do is get them to conceive themselves in a purely material manner, and then God's gone and we win. And that's what Marxism is. It's an atheistic materialism. So you can do it by making them well-fed slaves, that's the capitalist notion, or the impoverished and whipped slaves, that's the communist socialist notion. And they were just arguing about which way was the best way. Well, I think the answer's in. Let's do it the capitalist way. And so in order to understand the essential character of the bourgeois, it is necessary to disregard for the moment this universalized bourgeois culture, which is part of the very air we breathe, and turn back to the time when the bourgeois was still a distinct social type which could be isolated from the other elements in society and studied as an independent phenomenon. Now, I'm going to skip forward a little bit. I recommend that you go find this online. It's a very long article, and I'm skipping major sections that would help flesh it out even further. But it's called Catholicism and the Bourgeois Mind by Christopher Dawson. And if you're looking for the spelling of bourgeois, as I try my very poor French pronunciation, B-O-U-R-G-E-O-I-S, bourgeois, bourgeois. Okay, skipping forward. But while we may well congratulate ourselves that English social life has not been poisoned by class hatred and class war, it does not follow that the complete penetration of English culture by bourgeois standards and ideals is a good or admirable thing. It is even possible that the victory of the bourgeois has meant the destruction of elements that are not merely valuable but essential to English life, since the English tradition is something much wider and deeper than the machine-made urban and suburban culture by which it has been temporarily submerged. Now, remember, America flowed from this, from the English experiments with this whole bourgeois idea. Again, he hasn't really set it out completely what it is, but it's this, it was a class of people that during the Middle Ages, most people were either the nobles or the peasants, right? But inside the city walls, this little group of people developed, and they're not the shopkeepers and craftsmen. Don't get that idea. It was the ones who basically just dealt in money, right, and the exchange of things. And they were protected by the rest of society, but they weren't producers, and they weren't fighters, and they weren't spiritualists, and they weren't even producers. That was the bourgeois culture that was the little seed in the era of guilds and the like. Additionally, we have only to open our eyes to see that this criticism is justified. The devastated areas, now listen to this, the devastated areas of industrial England and the cantrous growth of the suburbs are not merely offensive to the aesthetic sense. They are symptoms of social disease and spiritual failure. The victory of bourgeois civilization has made England rich and powerful, but at the same time, it has destroyed almost everything that made it life worth living. Did you know that our suicide rate is really, really high, and that it's highest among the young people? You know why? We keep telling people, run faster, go longer, build bigger, make more, get in debt for it all. And then somebody says, why? And they go, because you want to make more and run faster and build more and get in debt for it all. And then someone says, yeah, you said that the first time, but I'm asking why again. Of course, you got to build more and run faster and make more and run and borrow everything and build and mine and open and, okay. And somebody kind of, you know, their head starts to kind of go, it sounds like you're talking about a wheel that I don't really want to run on. And because they have no spirituality, they give up. Well, if that's the meaning of life, no thanks, they say. This victory of bourgeois civilization has made England rich and powerful, but at the same time, it has destroyed almost everything that made life worth living. It has undermined the natural foundations of national life so that the whole social structure is in danger of ruin. Looked at from this point of view, the distinctive feature of the bourgeois culture is its urbanism. Now, come on, guys, this is 1962. You might have said back then that America looked like a hillbilly town. But it was already urbanizing significantly. And he says this is the cause of it. It involves the divorce of man from nature and from the life of the earth. It turns the peasant into a minder of machines and the yeoman into a shopkeeper until ultimately rural life becomes impossible and the very face of nature is changed by the destruction of the countryside and the pollution of the earth and the air and the waters. Now, again, I can't quit saying this. We're talking about 60 years ago, this guy's writing this, right? Most people wouldn't have even had destruction of the land on their radar. Most people would not have even thought about pollution at the time, right? Most people would have never said at that time, oh, no, come on, we're not really worried about losing productive capacity. Nobody's going to completely leave the farms and making things and building things. No, that's not going to happen. And yet every store, every craft, every farm, just about everything in America closed down in that 60 years. I think this guy's got something to say about the process. You can call him what you want. I don't know. You might go look him up and say, oh, he's a socialist. Oh, he's a this, he's a that. You know, because people don't know how to discern. I can't help that. I want to know what he factually said, and I want to see how good his prophecies were. And right now, he's hitting on all cylinders. 844-527-8723. You can call in. I am David Simpson here on the True Money Show Crusade Channel, last live radio station standing. Somebody this morning in the chat room, I was there for a little while listening and heard that Mike and Brother Andre had talked about the 40 martyrs, their feast days today. And somebody dropped $40 in the Crusader Stadium chat room saying one for each martyr, which is awesome. And so I'm going to encourage you, go into the chat room and that little dollar sign on the far right side, you see it there by where you type a message? Yeah, just click it. You can do the same thing right now. $40, one for each martyr, and say, hey, Mike, there you go. Keep the chat open. Okay, this is a characteristic of modern bourgeois civilization in general, but nowhere is it more striking than in England. And since English culture has been historically a peculiarly rural one, the victory of bourgeois civilization involves a more serious breach with the national tradition and a more vital revolution in ways of life and thought than in any other country of Western Europe. Okay. Now, if the bourgeois is the enemy of the peasant, he is no less the enemy of the artist and the craftsman. Now, he starts talking about this guy, Somburn, and I'm going to skip a little bit of that. But here's how he concludes some of the discussion of what this guy, Somburn, is talking about. The bourgeois sees in them only objects of exchange, the value of which is to be measured exclusively in terms of money. It makes no difference whether he is dealing in works of art or cheap, ready-made suits. All that matters is the volume of the transactions and the amount of profit to be derived from them. In other words, his attitude is not qualitative, but quantitative. The real dilemma, you know, as I see it, because I think that describes just about the entire American economy. It's quantitative. Bottom line, we hear it all the time. And improve the bottom line, drive up stock price, whatever, increase employment, make higher tax revenues, on and on and on and on as we strip mine everything around us, destroying everything good. My community, I used to call the little town I lived in, Covington, I used to call it God's country. Little tiny country town, 6,000 to 10,000 people, I think. And then populated around it by basically forest and farms and just what you'd call rural land and homesteads. It was beautiful. And the little town was very, very, pastoral, beautiful, calm, quiet. And now it's looks like Americana everywhere else. You know, highways running through it, way too many cars, infrastructure not satisfactory, governance everywhere, no beauty anymore, farms are gone, forests have been bulldozed down, new developments going up every corner. Hey, let's put another one in. We don't have enough traffic yet. This is the real dilemma as I see it. It's that real-life producers, real-life craftsmen don't exist. And if we try to become those things, this is what I find so damning. If we try to become a real-life producer, whether a farmer, a craftsman, some producer of a product, it produces very few dollars. What do I mean by that? It doesn't actually enable us to live. You know, you go sell a cow, which should be a lot of money, and you make $600 or something, okay, go out to dinner and buy a couple pair of shoes and a suit of clothes and you're done, right? And you go, wait, I got six other people in my family. That just fed and clothed me. Okay, we'll do 20 cows. All right, maybe I'm getting somewhere then. But generally, we don't have, I think the farmer was telling me the other day that most of the things he thinks about in farming are very capital intensive. Most of us don't have the money nor the time to jump full on into these more productive enterprises and then create that worthwhile income where we actually can escape this wheel that we're on. So we feel trapped. And that's what I think is the most damning of the whole thing. But you notice when I say something like this, people hate this kind of talk. They say, you'll be accused of being a socialist. But they also fear taking on the organic life. They don't want the more natural life. And you know why? Go back to the title of the article, Catholicism in the Bourgeois Mind. Because we've been indoctrinated in this monetized, completely peddling-oriented economy where we produce nothing, we just exchange all the time while someone is ripping us off in the back door by changing our money system. All right, back to the article. It is easy enough to see why this should be. For the bourgeois was originally the middleman who stood between the producer and the consumer, as merchant or salesman or broker or banker. And thus, there is not merely an analogy, but an organic connection between the role of the bourgeois in society and the economic function of money. Isn't that something? These are great insights. One is the middleman, and the other is the medium of exchange. The bourgeois lives for money, not merely as the peasant or the soldier or even the artist often does, but in a deeper sense. Since money is to him what arms are to the soldier and land is to the peasant, the tools of his trade and the medium through which he expresses himself, so that he often takes an almost disinterested pleasure in his wealth because of the virtuosity he has displayed in his financial operations. In short, the bourgeois is essentially a moneymaker, at once its servant and its master, and the development of his social ascendancy shows the degree to which civilization and human life are dominated by the money power.